This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharisa, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 32 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. There have been debates happening on Twitter over the last 48 hours after a report came out that said Le'Veon Bell was looking for not just top running back money, but more than that because, as we all know, he's sort of a receiver just as much as he's a running back. The Steelers offered Bell over $12 million per year, and he declined the offer because, and this is a quote from him, "The running back market definitely took a hit, and I can't be the guy who continues to let it take a hit. We do everything. We block, we run, we catch the ball. Our value isn't where it needs to be. I'm taking it upon myself to open up some eyes and show the position is more valuable." Now, I get that Bell and his agent are going to go into this situation in an attempt to prove that the position he plays is super valuable. It's no different than you, a project manager, going to your boss and telling them that everything would collapse at the company if the project manager position didn't exist. The value of a running back at the NFL level, though, is not as great as what Bell is making it out to be. I won't reiterate everything I said on the very first episode of the Late Round Podcast. You can go back and listen to that for yourself for more detail. But there are numbers and numbers and numbers that back the idea that running the football in today's NFL is incredibly ineffective when you consider alternatives. You know, like throwing the football. And the correlation to winning is twice as strong via passing than it is rushing. Forget all of that though. Go listen to episode 1 if you disagree with me or want stronger takes, because there are stronger takes in that episode. What actually blew me away when this news broke was how folks couldn't quite comprehend the fact that being elite at your position doesn't automatically make you a must-need asset. I somewhat jokingly tweeted, but not really, that the Steelers' offense was actually really good with D'Angelo Williams when Le'Veon Bell's been out over the last, well, over his career, because he always misses time. It wasn't to say that I think that D'Angelo Williams is the same caliber player as Le'Veon Bell has been. It was to say that spending at a position where you can see relatively decent replaceability makes absolutely no sense. But then there were tweets like, "But can D'Angelo Williams do this?" with a gif of Le'Veon Bell doing crazy things on a field. No, D'Angelo Williams can't do that because Le'Veon Bell is one of the best running back talents of this era. But that doesn't mean he deserves more than the 12 plus million that the Steelers were offering him. If that's the logic, if the logic is that Bell is so good and talented at the running back position and it can't be replicated by any other running back, then I guess we can just use that same logic for Justin Tucker. Why isn't Justin Tucker making $15 million per year? Because he's a kicker. He's playing a position that doesn't impact the game as much as, say, a quarterback. But guess what? Running backs don't impact football games the way Le'Veon Bell thinks that they do. This isn't to say that Le'Veon isn't a dynamic player and one of the, if not the, best at his position. I think that he is. I've never seen a runner like Le'Veon Bell before, and he adds a great element to the Steelers' offense. The Steelers without Le'Veon Bell are not as good as the Steelers with Le'Veon Bell. But at some point, just like in fantasy football, we have to take a step back and not look at how much better a player is versus his peers, but what his positional value actually is. And unfortunately for Bell, running backs are everywhere, and the position just doesn't matter as much as it used to in the NFL. I'm sorry, I had to get that out of the way, but now that it is out of the way, let's get to some of the mailbag questions for this week's episode. This first one is an email from Alex. He says, "Hey JJ, absolutely love the show, my favorite podcast to listen to." Thank you, Alex. "I'm in a half point per reception keeper league where we start one quarterback, two running backs, two wide receivers, a tight end, and two flex. I've got a great start with Melvin Gordon, DeMarco Murray, Antonio Brown, Mike Evans, Rob Gronkowski, and Davante Adams. Good Lord. Should I consider taking Jordan Reed if he's there at my pick so I could use him as a flex and have him and Gronk? Or would you recommend staying away and taking a running back like Bilal Powell, Amir Abdullah, or CJ Anderson? Or targeting a wide receiver like Willie Snead, Dante Moncrief, or Brandon Marshall? Thanks." So questions like this often have so many variables that I can't really answer them super directly. For instance, I don't know who's going to be available at your pick, and I don't know exactly what the player pool looks like given the amount of keepers in your league. With that being said, in most cases, I would not target a tight end specifically to use in the flex spot. But given the alternatives that you threw out there, I can definitely understand the logic in drafting Jordan Reed over, say, Amir Abdullah. I would take Reed over Amir Abdullah all day long. If you look at what Reed did last season, or let's just combine the last two seasons because those were his two breakout years, you're looking at per-game numbers of 7.8 targets, 5.88 receptions, 63 yards, and 0.65 touchdowns per game. That's 16.12 PPR points per game, or 257 points across an entire season. Those are basically like Doug Baldwin numbers. But that's also an insane ceiling that he more than likely won't reach. Reed's a concussion away from potentially not playing football again, though that's just a random opinion from a non-doctor. I'm just saying that his health report is frightening. But even if you get 12 or 13 games out of him, I think he's fine as a top pick for your squad, mostly because of that ceiling. And I should note, your lineup is only starting two running backs and two wide receivers, so the tight end position isn't as devalued as it would be in, say, a three wide receiver league. Like I said, I generally don't go for tight ends in the flex, almost never. But I can make a case for Jordan Reed's upside, and since you have such an absurd foundation at the other positions that you're keeping, and since the alternatives outside of Reed aren't that strong, I think it's totally fine if you want to draft him. This next one's from Nate Hamilton from Twitter, at DominateFF. He says, which player's ADP have you most puzzled? One good, one bad. I love this question, Nate. Thanks for asking it. On the bad end, or someone who I think is vastly overrated, I'm going to say Marshawn Lynch. Now, I did actually draft Marshawn Lynch in the Scott Fishbowl just a week or two ago, but that league favors running backs heavily, it's non-PPR, and Lynch fell to RB16, where there was a clear drop-off in that format in my eyes to the next group of backs. I actually wanted Joe Mixon with that pick, got sniped, so I got Marshawn Lynch. On Fantasy Football Calculator, though, Lynch is listed as a late second rounder at RB11. For a guy who didn't play football last year, was injured the year prior, and will be 31 next season, that's a hefty price tag. I do think his ceiling is there, so don't take this the wrong way. I can absolutely envision a scenario where Marshawn Lynch is a top 10 running back in fantasy football this season. But I also think his floor is borderline frightening and would much rather take someone like Isaiah Crowell, even Ty Montgomery or Joe Mixon in PPR formats over Marshawn Lynch. I just don't know if he's going to see the workload to warrant a second round selection. On the opposite end, there are a lot of guys I don't really understand. I just recently published an article on NumberFire that talked through the 13 guys who are most undervalued in fantasy football this year, and I'll be doing a show next week on some of them, but one player's ADP I just don't get is Frank Gore. I mean, why not? Let's just stay with the running backs who take Metamucil each morning with their breakfast. I get it. Gore is old AF. But he's already sort of broken the age curve. At 33 years of age last season, he ran the ball 263 times, the fifth highest total for any running back in that age group ever. And he hit the 1,000-yard mark, becoming the third running back to do so at 33 years or older. And the dude was a high-end RB2 from a weekly perspective last season, guys. Like, Frank Gore was 13th in top 12 performances, 8th in top 18 performances, and 8th in top 24 performances at the running back position last year. I get that everyone is searching for massive upside with each pick, and that's also why he's dropped in ADP. It's not just because of his age. But players like Frank Gore are certainly still usable in fantasy football, especially if you are picking a lot of boomer bust players and need some sort of stability in your lineup. It's not as though he's allergic to decent scoring weeks in an offense that's going to score a decent amount of points. So those are the dudes. Marshawn Lynch is overrated. Frank Gore is underrated. This next one's an email from Roman Perziola. He says, hey JJ, fellow Yinzer and Pitt alum here. Hail to Pitt. Just started listening to your pods and I love your straight to the point, stats driven approach to a podcast. That's the industrial engineer in me talking. They are a breeze to comprehend given what you are doing behind the scenes and make my drives between Ohio and Pittsburgh much easier over the weekends. Thanks, man. My question, I know that PPR is becoming the prevalent scoring system in fantasy. ESPN made it a part of their primary scoring system, and a lot of the resources I use only discuss topics in terms of PPR. My league, however, is half PPR. Is it safe to take advice for PPR leagues and directly translate it to 0.5 PPR? How would you handle this? Thanks for all your hard work, Roman. As I like to preach, Roman, there's a lot of variance in fantasy football. We're going to be wrong all of the time. I would guess, generally speaking, that someone's advice on one player won't dramatically change in a PPR or standard league because of that fact. There are certainly guys that I'd prefer more in PPR formats, maybe someone like Ty Montgomery. But I think it's easier to note those types of players rather than going through an exercise of figuring out who's valuable and not depending on the format. And obviously, if you're using projections and if you have a projected stat line, it's very easy to just adjust your scoring, but I'm assuming that you don't. And since it's a half PPR league, it's actually a nice medium in that you're going to know that any advice will moderately suit your league type. It's a dumb answer, I know, but I genuinely think that that's how you approach it if you're not going to go crazy deep into the analysis yourself. This next one is from Ross Kidwell. He says, am I crazy thinking Hoyer is a great draft day value? He's free. He seems to produce fantasy points every time he plays, even on teams with bad players around him. Hoyer plus Shanny equals money? Well, Ross, I'd say that you're crazy for two reasons. First, there's a lot of good, usable quarterbacks that go late, so there's really no need to pinpoint Hoyer as a late-round quarterback selection. And second, that little equation of Hoyer plus Shanny equals money, Hoyer plus Shanny equaled garbage the last time they were together. I see why am I. Kyle Shanahan coached Brian Hoyer in 2014 with the Browns. That year, Cleveland threw 12 passing touchdowns. Hoyer had 12 touchdowns to 13 interceptions with a 2.7 touchdown rate back in 2014 with Kyle Shanahan. While I think Brian Hoyer is a way better passer than most give him credit for, and he will definitely be a usable streamer this year, his floor is just amazingly low given his situation. The 49ers offense is lacking tremendously. I wouldn't want to associate my quarterback with those weapons. And remember, negative game scripts aren't a good thing for quarterbacks. The majority of passers are better in positive scripts. Rich Rebar did a great job explaining this in episode 32. So Hoyer as a streamer? Sure, we'll see. As a guy that I draft? Not a chance. This next one's from Joshua Jenkins. He says, JJ, hoping this question makes the cut since we both go by JJ. I'll try to keep this concise. Yes, it did make the cut because we both go by JJ. In a league where we get to select our draft slot based on random draw, I was selected third, so I'll potentially be able to pick as high as pick number two, as number one was already claimed. At which point would you consider drafting at the 10-11 turn and take back-to-back picks throughout the draft rather than slot X? I'm personally not high on Zeke this year as a top three pick, and I'm happy with any of the big three wide receivers and may even include AJ Green as a fourth. If slot two is available, I think it's a no-brainer to take Le'Veon Bell or David Johnson, but beyond that, I think I'm okay going as low as seven, if not at the turn. Thanks. I'll be honest with you guys. I try to not care as much about first round picks because there's way too much of an emphasis on what to do with first rounders in the fantasy football industry. So, JJ, Josh, whatever you go by, I think you can do what you feel most comfortable with. I agree that the first two picks are the best, and I'm certainly a lot lower on Zeke now that there could be a suspension. I'd probably lean getting a top five pick in order to lock in one of the big three receivers if I don't get the number two pick, which means I may select pick five if I don't get the second pick, which would land me either Antonio Brown, Odell Beckham, or Julio Jones. But I'd also want third overall if Zeke didn't get suspended, so depending on when you decide, I'd keep an eye on the suspension talk. Aside from that, I'd probably want to be closer to the tail end of the first round and get one of the backs in the McCoy, Ajayi, Gordon tier, favoring Shady McCoy the most, and I'll get into more of that later. I hope that kind of helps, but with a lot of first round questions, I'll be honest and say that I think you'll be able to answer one like this just as well as I could, since there really aren't that many decisions to make. This next one's from Twitter, at bscully121, 12-team PPR dynasty. Move Evans for either T.Y. Hilton, Adams and Britt, or Antonio Brown and Willie Snead. I'm a contender with great running back depth. Other wide receivers are Hopkins, Tate, Fitz, and Marshall. So in trades, both redraft and dynasty, I almost always try to obtain the best asset in that trade. To you, it might be Mike Evans, but to me, I'm still in on Antonio Brown over Mike Evans in dynasty. I know that sounds crazy to some of you given age and the fact that Big Ben could retire any second now while Jameis Winston is a young buck, but AB has shown elite consistency while Evans truly, truly tailed off at the end of last year. When the Buccaneers started winning games last year after their 3-5 start, Mike Evans dropped 4.2 targets per game since they were more run heavy. He averaged about 7 fewer PPR points per contest compared to the first half of the season. With more mouths to feed in that offense, even long term now, I don't think Evans is as elite as some do. I also play for today all the time because money now is worth more than money later, and given you're a contender right now, I'd definitely be down to take the AB and Snead side of that trade. You can honestly start Snead too, given your wide receiver options. This next one's an email from Chris Conway. JJ, love your pod and all the in-season articles. Thanks, man. Could you talk about trading draft picks, how to be successful doing so? I'm in a 10-team standard one-keeper league and want to trade for Brady, who is being kept by another owner in the 6th round. Thanks again, Chris. First off, Chris, what are you doing trading for a quarterback? Come on, man. In all seriousness, I think the easiest way to think about trading picks for players is pretty similar to the way that I've talked about selecting keepers. You have to look at market value. Brady's a fourth-ish rounder or so, so you'd technically be gaining equity if you get him for, let's say, a sixth rounder. With that being said, if that means you can't keep someone else since it's a single keeper league, I'm not all for that because there's then a stronger opportunity cost in keeping Tom Brady. You're foregoing the opportunity and keeping another player on your roster who may have just as good a value. So overall, and this is going to be a short answer, using market value and adding a little bit of cushion for opportunity cost is probably the easiest way to look at things when you're trading draft picks. This next one's an email from Sam Betts. He says, "Hey JJ, I enjoy your podcast and analysis. Keep up the great work. Over the past 2 years, I've been streaming the hell out of quarterbacks and tight ends. I look for them late in the draft and stream them throughout the year, and it works well for me." That's great to hear. "However, last year I joined a new league that is a 12-team league. It starts a quarterback, two running backs, three wide receivers, tight end, and a flex, and of course, a defense and a kicker. But this league has a 22 waiver wire limit, so I can only do waiver transactions 22 times, and then I'm done. Trades don't count against the limit, but I wasn't sure on how to approach the season when it comes to streaming quarterback and tight end. I ended up drafting Breeze early last year, which I hated, and tried to do my best with tight end throughout the year. I didn't end up using the whole limit, but that's because I wanted to be sure that I had some left at the end of the season. How would you approach this league? Would you still go late round quarterback and not worry too much on the transaction limit, or maybe consider pulling the trigger on quarterback and tight end a bit earlier than usual? Thanks, Sam." I think you can pull the trigger a little bit earlier on those positions, but if there's a decent amount of bench spots, I'm all for drafting multiple players at those positions and then platooning them. But really, there's just got to be a little more planning involved here. You may at times be forced to just hold two passers and play by matchup over the course of a few weeks in order to maximize your waiver moves. But at the same time, 22 moves isn't all that limiting. I've unfortunately seen worse out there, which is annoying to me because the point of fantasy football is to interact with folks and have fun. And a great way to do that is to, you know, have an active league. It's like saying, "Hey guys, let's play GoldenEye, but slappers only, please." Why would you not want to use the golden gun? That was a bad analogy, but I needed some 90s nostalgia in this episode. Overall though, don't be afraid to hold multiple quarterbacks throughout the season, even though I typically will only hold one when there's unlimited waiver moves. And sure, if you feel a little bit more comfortable, draft a quarterback maybe instead of the 11th or 12th round in the 8th or 9th round. This next one's from Twitter, @FantasyProof. "What sort of analysis has been done on effect of changing coordinators? Anywhere you can find historical coaching staff roster data?" So there's been a lot of stuff done on coordinators in general, but I'm not sure about the overall team effect on changing coordinators. I would guess it just plays into what those coordinators like to do and what their tendencies are. As for coaching data, Pro Football Reference has some info, but you'll have to probably build a bit of a database to get the full picture. But I also wanted to use this time to talk about something that I tweeted about a week or so ago. I tweeted, "I analyze offensive coordinator data, but I think there's a lot of confirmation bias involved when making it the core argument for a player." And I sincerely, sincerely meant that. Offensive coordinator data is another piece of the puzzle, and it can really, really be useful, especially when you know the coordinators who push their system on players, no matter the personnel, versus guys who alter their system based on the players that they have. But with that being said, there's so much confirmation bias that can happen with coordinator data. The Kyle Shanahan feeding his top receiver thing comes to mind. While I think there are reasons to think it's somewhat factual, what backs up the case is that Andre Johnson was fed in Houston, then Santana Moss in 2010 in Washington when Shanahan was coordinating, then Pierre Garçon had a monster 181 target season in 2013, and then Julio Jones went ham in 2015 with over 200 targets. But here's the thing. Andre Johnson saw just as many targets without Kyle Shanahan as offensive coordinator in Houston. Santana Moss's top competition in 2010 was Anthony Armstrong. Pierre Garçon's best teammate was then a 34-year-old Santana Moss with Washington in 2013, and Julio Jones was competing with the corpse of Roddy White in 2015 for targets. There are reasons why these guys saw the amount of looks that they saw. There was no competition. And if this narrative is so true, why, when Kyle Shanahan was offensive coordinator in Cleveland in 2014, were the targets spread around? What about when he was in Washington in 2011 and 2012, where the top targets saw 114 targets and 73 targets respectively? And in that 2012 season, if you want to blame that on injury to Pierre Garçon, just know that if he did play a full season, his prorated target total was still just 108. Oh, and by the way, Julio Jones didn't see the same game-to-game market share that he did in 2015 last year. Why? Because the Falcons had more pass catchers. This is why coordinator data can get you into trouble. I like using it to think about how teams may perform or how often they may try to run versus pass, but I also try to not fall into the positional traps like the Kyle Shanahan top receiver one. This last question is from Charlie Nunn. He says, "Hi JJ, I'm sitting at the 8th overall pick in a 10-team league draft, half PPR, and find myself leaning running back because most round 2 running backs are being kept and the supply is much less than normal. Rankings indicate I should take Shady or Melvin Gordon, but my gut says to take Devontae Freeman. Can you please elaborate on your pick decision and or rankings process between these three guys? Thanks a ton, Charlie." So Charlie, I would lean LeSean McCoy in this scenario, and here's why. Of the three guys you mentioned, I've got Shady getting the most carries, beating Melvin Gordon by 5. Freeman's obviously not in a spot to see a massive amount of touches with Tevin Coleman in that backfield. You saw him with 227 last year, and from a projection standpoint, McCoy and Gordon are both far ahead of a guy like Devontae Freeman. Now, each of these guys scored more rushing touchdowns than they should have last year if you look at it from a carries per touchdown or rushing yards per touchdown perspective. But a big reason to not favor Freeman over those dudes is overall offensive regression. Freeman was 5th in the NFL in carries within the opponent's 5-yard line last season because of all those opportunities, despite the fact that the players ahead of him, except Matt Asiata, who's a goal line specialist, saw 250-plus attempts, meaning there's a higher probability of having those chances. Basically, with Tevin Coleman in the backfield, a new coordinator, and natural regression coming for the Atlanta offense, I can't confidently tell you that Freeman will see as good of opportunity as Melvin Gordon and LeSean McCoy. So then it comes down to Melvin Gordon and LeSean McCoy. My model leans Shady's way, and I definitely think it's the less risky proposition. Melvin Gordon was fortunate last year and actually might not be a great running back overall. He had a decent enough efficiency rate according to NumberFire metrics, but his success rate, or the percentage of positive expected points runs made by a back, was really, really low. That tells us that he made a living on the bigger, higher impact plays because he wasn't getting that efficiency consistently. That's why in an article I did over on NumberFire, I mentioned that if we're looking for this year's Todd Gurley between Melvin Gordon, Jay Ajayi, and Jordan Howard, I would actually lean Melvin Gordon being that guy. The difference, though, between Melvin Gordon and Todd Gurley is that Melvin Gordon's offense is far, far better than Gurley's, so I still think that he's a top draft pick because of the potential to score and have positive game scripts. I still think Melvin Gordon is a late first, early second round pick in fantasy. But McCoy just doesn't have these concerns. He's done this for years, he's got a great offensive line with a running quarterback, and the backfield is mostly to himself. So in your scenario, I don't think I would be ballsy enough to pull the trigger on Freeman. I think Gordon's range of outcomes includes big disappointment because he might not be as good as we think, and that leaves the boring pick, LeSean McCoy. That'll do it for this week's show, though, everyone. Make sure you're subscribed on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play so that you don't miss another one because the season is getting closer and closer. And if you're on iTunes, please, please, please do me a favor. Leave a rating, write a review. It would be greatly appreciated. Next week, I'll be doing a show that looks more specifically at this season and some undervalued players, so it'll be less of an evergreen show like some of the other ones that I've done this offseason. And I'll be honest, that'll probably be more or less the norm moving forward with this show until the end of the season. I'll dig into specific topics still, because that's what this podcast is all about, but I'm going to be making those topics more player-centric and about this specific season to help you all dominate your drafts once August hits. As always, I'll keep doing these mailbag shows each Friday, so keep hitting me up with questions either on Twitter at LateRoundQB or via email at jj@numberfire.com. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'll talk to you next week.